Roll up! Roll up! Ladies and gentlemen, to the greatest podcast on Earth! Step right up and experience the magnificence that is the Two Ring Circus Podcast! You'll gasp! You'll laugh! And you'll be amazed at what comes next.
Amazing.
Don't worry about the smell. It's just the stars of our show, Tom Italiano.
Hello.
And Matt Bradshaw.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hey, welcome.
Oh, g'day, mate.
Nice to see you again. I don't see you often enough.
No. Oh. Tell me.
Well, I haven't seen a film for ages, so I can't tell you about that.
Oh. I saw Gnomeo and... No. I saw Sherlock Gnomes.
Cool.
Yeah.
Fun?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah. I saw Gnomeo and... Well, I didn't see
it. I
saw
Gnomeo and Juliet.
I projected it years ago.
The people I were with preferred Gnomeo and Juliet.
Okay. Makes sense.
Apparently it had more jokes.
Oh, okay.
So.
I wonder if it had more. You know, sometimes your first experience of something, you just, you know, it's like, oh, I love that. And then the next thing you see, which is similar to the other thing, you're expecting it. It needs to be that little bit better to be seen as good.
Yes.
Because you're already familiar with the groundwork is already there.
Yes.
It's why people say, like, you know, everyone's...
I can't tell you what I'm thinking about.
Well, everyone's first album is like, you know. Because I think Alanis Morissette's second album is better than Jagged Little Pill. But it's just not as... Yeah, that's...
I just realised.
Sprocket's found something to eat.
Good.
I think his songs are really interesting. It's quite... But it's just that it's not the revelation that the first one was.
Mm.
Yeah.
One of the other podcasts I listen to, it's Frank Skinner. I've spoken about him on here before. They have a recurring, not a segment, but a recurring conversation where they talk about facts that many, many people present as being, oh my God, did you know? And it's actually quite widely known.
Oh.
The one they use, but it has no reference to us, they call them big moments. Because Big Mo is a character on some English TV show, and she, in real life, is Gary Oldman's sister.
Right.
So apparently it's...
Oh, did you know that's Gary Oldman's sister?
Yeah, and everyone knows.
Yeah. I had a Nanamo.
Did you?
She was big. She's short. She's compacted.
Yeah, that can often be how it manifests. Alanis Morissette had a career before she had Jagged Little Pill.
Did you know?
Yeah.
She was on... What was that kids' TV show? Kids Incorporated?
No, wasn't it the one where they got slimed?
Isn't that the same show?
Oh,
no?
Was it?
I don't know. No, that's You Can't Do That on Television.
Oh, yeah, wasn't it that?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hmm.
Did you know Tori Amos had an album called Why Can't Tori Read before Little Earthquakes?
No.
And she was dressed up
as a
dominatrix on the front cover?
No, I didn't.
Yes.
See, I wonder how many people know that.
Well.
What about... Do you know Katy Perry had an album before?
Wasn't she a Christian artist? She was a Christian artist.
No.
Yeah.
She was Kate Hudson.
Well, that's a silly move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's... I've got it. It's odd. It's not very Katy Perry-like.
It's not very Kiss the Girls.
Not very Kiss the Girls.
Speaking of Kiss the Girls, I watched the film that you were trying to tell me about, The Wonder Woman. Professor Marsden.
Oh, I hadn't seen it.
I saw it last night.
And? I haven't seen a film for a long time, he says.
I haven't been to the cinema. I thought it was going to be a documentary. I didn't, because I, you know, the way you had described
it. I thought it was too.
But it wasn't. It was a film, but it was.
Oh.
I'd love to see a documentary about it. It would be really interesting. But it's an incredible story.
Mm.
It's an incredible story. Yeah.
Mm.
I would recommend. I would recommend
not bothering. Oh right.
No, I'd recommend people. What's interesting about it is the three lead characters. That's why there are so many chords in this song. I played this recently. I sang it recently at the same time as trying to play all the chords. Wow. It was very difficult. So many chords. And time changes. Bars of two. Weird.
Bars of two.
So
racist.
Real life Professor Marsden and his two Wonder Women were not anywhere near as conventionally attractive as the three people that were in this film.
Oh
my lord, are they, the three of them,
right?
Stunning.
Yeah,
okay. Like all three of them, like, he's super handsome. Rebecca Hall's a beautiful woman. It's like, all right, it's interesting.
Do you mean Rebecca Hall's with Boughs of Holly?
I like that.
Thanks.
Tra-la-la-la. Yeah. but it's good. It was a good film, okay. Well acted, interesting. I would like to have seen it less as a biopic and more of the Wonder Woman aspect.
Right.
But it was good.
Okay.
Yeah, it's worth watching.
Good.
Love to see a doco on it. It'd be really interesting.
Yeah, the story. That's what compelled me to talk about it 12 months ago.
Yeah.
Probably not quite.
Oh, no, when Wonder Woman came out, yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Wow.
What else? Any other stories for me?
We booked a venue for our dual adventure, you and I.
Mm-hmm. Not a dual adventure.
We're going to sword fight in public.
Oh, right. I thought you meant the other one.
What?
You know, the one that supported John Mayer, gave me the shits.
Jewel?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Jewel is in the female singer?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Don't like her?
Nah, she's really annoying.
Is she?
She was really annoying at this thing. She just whined a lot.
Okay.
I don't mean like Bernard Fanning. Because she's a fine singer.
Yeah.
She just whined a lot between songs.
I was in the complain about the world.
I think so.
Like political statements and stuff.
I don't know. No, that probably wouldn't have offended me.
Oh.
Nah, she's just she's whiny.
Okay.
And actually, I don't think I like her songs either, now that I think about it.
Okay. I'm not.
Squeeze out the toothpaste, put the cat back on.
Meow.
Oh, that will always make me laugh.
I'm not that familiar with anything other than the first few songs. Mm. Anything else? Our thing. We're going to do a joint.
Sorry.
We're going to do a live podcast recording in front of an audience if anyone comes, and then after we do that, we're going to do a version of our Crowded House tribute gig.
Yeah.
And we have a venue and a date booked, but we will announce it.
Yeah.
Not now.
No, we'll build the suspenders.
Suspension.
I'm excited.
Bridge. It'll be fun. I like the idea of doing a live podcast. I think we've got to work out how that's going to work as far as... I think we definitely need to make it... don't every time I say definitely, say definitely.
I didn't.
I know, you wanted to.
I did. Definitely.
Yeah. I think we should... you know, get questions from the audience to answer and subjects to talk about, and mm-hmm. Then we could leave ourselves open to saying controversial things. Someone calling you.
That's weird.
That is weird.
My phone switched to silent.
Well, it's not being silent. Bloody phones. Oh, Lord.
Yeah, Lord.
Yeah. Well, that... anyway, never mind. So we're going to do that. So that's some news. Have you got some news too?
Turns out an ex-girlfriend of mine is racist.
What's wrong with being racy? Turns out. Did you not have any idea that she would hold such viewpoints?
No. I think she's become increasingly cantankerous as age has overtaken her. Yes, I see occasional Facebook posts that are quite ranty in nature. And very much the open letter to whoever wants to take notice, but
whoever, you mean an open like letter to whoever agrees.
Yeah.
Are they mostly like that?
And also, you know, addressing the people that are not ever going to read it.
Yeah.
Like the next door neighbour.
Yeah, okay.
You know, that sort of thing. But yeah. Pretty remarkable series of messages that went backwards and forwards. Backwards and backwards. Yeah. Which eventually culminated in... it started out that she wrote something... She used a term that I thought... That I know is derogatory and offensive. And she wrote it in a Facebook post. So I didn't call her out on it. I wrote, "I'm sure you didn't intend this to come across the way it has." And then I posted a definition of the word, the current definition of that particular word. And I got a fairly vitriolic response on the Facebook page saying, "Before you start looking up your definitions on Wikipedia, get off your high horse and come and live the life I live." Oh, hang on. Okay. Interesting. And then a follow-up Facebook message saying, "Don't berate me and don't criticise me.
She's trying to suggest that she has a cultural bias, which we all do, of some kind or another. But undermining her cultural bias, she's using decidedly offensive language, which undermines any message she has because she's being confrontational in the way she's describing the scenario.
Yeah, and as a way of explaining... So I never actually accused her of being racist. What I did was offer her a not even a way out. I highlighted the word that I think is offensive and suggested that maybe she wasn't using it in the right context or was using it in a context that doesn't fit in 2018.
Mm. Or doesn't fit if you've got a point you're trying to make. So I assume that her rant was, we have a problem in this section of the world with people who behave in a certain way.
Yeah.
And it's got to a point where, other people also notice this. We think this is a problem and it's being perpetrated by certain members of society who are probably some kind of minority group, I assume.
Mm.
Yeah. And the point that she has is a legitimate point / concern.
Sure.
But because of the way she presents it as an issue, she's kind of pointing it out in a way that's like aggressive towards a whole section of society as opposed to just the people perpetrating yes. the crime.
Yeah.
Right. So she's being racist.
She essentially did the "I'm not racist, but..."
Yeah, okay. And then when you
went as far as saying, "You can't call me racist. I've even dated one of them."
So saying them.
One of them.
Yeah, right. So just really not understanding the use of language in that context.
No.
Yeah. Or purposefully trying to make a point. Like when a kid gets... Well, not a kid, but when anyone gets told off, so they dig their heels in further.
Yes.
I mean, you don't know what it's like. You don't live here. It's exactly how the Holocaust started. I mean, there's the rest of the world kind of, we've got this problem in Germany. You don't know what it's like to live here. We're trying to deal with it.
Sure.
Right? It's like, you can't do that.
So the whole thing was, because I showed you the initial kind of thing that was all unfolding on Saturday.
Yes,
yeah, including the getting called out, as in, so someone's taken me to task. Instead, I'm going to use try to explain her viewpoint.
Yep.
Brackets, is that better, Matt? And at the end of that post, I wrote, "No, it's not. I'm out." And I've known this girl for 25 years. And we were, like I said, we were in a relationship. And it was fiery. It's one of the more fiery relationships I've been in. But we've remained friends through all of this. But yeah, it was okay. So I pointed out something that I thought was wrong, and you've come back at me, and then I've subsequent to that, I've offered you a lifeline to kind of so you could modify your viewpoint, or yeah, I am saying you have to take it back, but I'm not, you know, I'm giving you a way out of this.
Yeah.
No, you're not going to take it. So the thing that you weren't privy to that came after that was, it seems after research, you're right, it's a derogatory term. You were right and I was wrong with what I knew. There are worse words, but that wasn't my intent. I was just calling the situation as I saw it. Excuse me for being concerned about those other people around when these chicks were screaming and hitting each other. And then you need to get out of the city and see what things are really like. So you were right and I was wrong. Didn't actually say I'm sorry, but that's okay. You know, I'll take that as implied. Fuck.
It's an interesting...
Go look for yourself firsthand, then bitch to me.
Yeah.
Oh, dude.
It's an interesting response, because I've had that response too, when I've decided that I wanted to bring something up with someone, and you know, they might have done a bit of research or whatever, and then come back and said, you know, you were right, I was wrong. It's like, no, it's not. This is not an I'm right, you're wrong. So it's not why it's important to have this conversation. And I've had people say, oh, you just want to be right. It's like, I don't just want to be right. And it's not that, and I'm not saying necessarily that I am. I'm just saying from the way that you're presenting your position, you seem to be upset and angry about something that's happening. And what I'm trying to say is, from where I'm standing, it seems like a lot of the reason why you're upset and angry is because of your position, not because of what's happening. Those are two separate things. So if you can work out why you feel the way you do about it, right, you can put that aside and then look at the problem that you're responding to. Because most of the vitriol that people have about something is about them. It's not about the thing.
Sure.
I'm not going to bring up the cricket, but there's just so many things that happen and that people respond publicly. Just like, that says way more about you than the thing that you're worried about, that you're talking about. And therefore, that's the conversation that I'm trying to have with you. Mm. It's about your position and why you feel that way, why you feel strongly, and why that's a problem for you, not the thing, because it's very rarely the thing that is the... I mean, and that might be the instigator, but it often does. The reaction usually to me seems way out of proportion to what the thing is.
And the reason I saved this bit of the conversation for 2 weeks is it ties very nicely into
Rule 6.
It does.
Oh, nice.
No!
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So there you go. Rule 6. Set your house in perfect order before you criticize the world.
How about that?
It's a short chapter, but it's big.
Do you think it's a short chapter because any more explanation than he's gone into would just basically lead to another 5 books?
honestly, I kind of thought that about the last chapter. I thought the last chapter was far bigger than it needed to be.
Okay.
Longer than it needed to be.
Yeah.
So the last one really just could have been part of his pamphlet. Just parent your child better. This is the way to do it.
Yep.
fucking chimpanzees.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. I mean, I was saying to you earlier, if you read this book with the... Oh, hey, puppy. So here's a guy that's written this book. He's a clinical psychologist with 30 years of practice under his belt. And if you read or listen to it with that in the back of your mind, that he's coming at this... He's loud.
He's allowed to be.
So for anyone who doesn't know, that's actually a sprocket making all that noise.
Yeah.
That was me, but Sprocket makes similar noise. He's coming at this from having to deal with what I would assume is mostly adults who have gone through their life and developed pathology from things that have started from a very young age. And so it's not just someone who just has an opinion. He has experience helping or trying to help people through or work back through and unpack issues that can go back to childhood.
Yep.
So he does have a certain kind of insight into how a lot of this stuff can manifest into
sure.
quite destructive behaviour.
Yeah, absolutely. So well, as we said last week, you know, that it's learned behaviour that you build on and build on and build on and build on.
Yeah. And this was interesting for me going through, through this book and going, oh, whew, yeah, all right, I got stuff, you know, to continue to look at. But there's,
we've all got stuff. The difference between you and I is I don't care about my stuff. It can just stay the way it is.
Yeah, but that's not true. You're so cool.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Look at you with your bloody cut off flannel. I don't care.
Did I tell you that one of our friends called me out about my what I thought was clearly a joke that I made about self help books, that I don't read any of them because I'm so well adjusted I don't need any of that shit in my life?
And it took you seriously and just right.
I hope you, and clearly was at that point in the podcast. And I presume stopped it in indignation. I presume you're joking about I don't know. Was I?
I don't know.
Brilliant. Fuck, I laughed.
Yeah, this... So effectively what this book, this chapter is about is... it's pretty dense in the... He's pretty lovely.
G'day, mate. Fancy seeing you here.
Oh, Sprocket. You're no good for... an audio podcast. Now the video version of this is going to be really entertaining and noisy. Sprocko, see, this is interesting because I don't let him do this to me. Like,
I don't
climb over.
I don't let him do this to you either.
No. Hey. Hey, Matt.
Down. Hey, Matt. Not this Matt. The other Matt.
Other Matt. That's not your Matt. That's his own Matt.
That's it's easy to be confused.
Over here. Come on.
Oh.
On your bed. On your bed.
Oh. She could see his face.
She could see his face. He looks like an in trouble Darth Vader dog. He's got that kind of...
You mean Rick Moranis?
oh, wow. Jeez, we're not getting through this chapter, are we?
Sorry, dude.
That's all right.
Okay. Oh, what's happened? You've given
up. I'm hot now. I'm warmed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to take my clothes off. Can take my clothes off.
No, I can't.
What?
I got no voice. I can't sing it for you.
What's that?
He's getting...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, don't sing that anyway.
Oh, it's great. I did it at a wedding a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was good. Went over well.
Yeah, good.
Okay, come on. Okay, yes, okay. We'd all like to write our own reviews.
Oh, gosh. It's all over the joint, this world. So there's a lot of talk a bit about how when people, I find this hard to talk about because obviously he goes in depth into how people can get to the point where they judge the world, their experience of the world is as such that they seem like humans are only good to be killed. Like they're just, but life is not... life is not worth living, and in order to express that, not only do they have the idea that they're contemptible of their own life, but they hold everyone else's in contempt. And the suggestion here is this is how the school shooters approach, and they have a almost religious, fanatical religious approach to their view that humans are. A scourge on the earth, and we should give it back to the animals, kind of thing. And so, and the interesting point is, particularly with the school shooters or, you know, serial murderers or rapists, is they generally pick innocents to perpetrate their crime against.
Mm-hmm.
So they, you know, so children in school, you know, young women, you know, they want to destroy something that's pure.
Mm-hmm.
And that was this thing, the vengeance of transformation. That's pretty full on. But just it kind of talks about how, you know, humans are capable of terrible, terrible, terrible things when they're not left, but when they can blame society.
Sure.
And that people, you know, society is built from people, and so that if there is a problem in society,
are they blaming society or blaming nature?
I'm not quite sure. Yeah, it's a struggle for me, this chapter.
Yeah, right.
But the idea that people make up society, and therefore if there's a problem in society, it's people's fault. So if they see society as having a problem, what they do is they blame the people who make it up for everything.
Sure.
And so then they want to attack everyone for the problems that they see in society. So, like, we're all responsible for every problem there is.
I mean, these extreme examples that you're talking about, well, are exactly that.
Extreme.
They're extreme.
Yeah.
But actually, it's the way that most of us behave.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you and I have spoken on this podcast about it, but also about situations that we have each found ourselves in where we've known people personally well that are always looking for the extrinsic reason for their particular poor situation rather than having a look at what's own. Happening inside.
Yeah.
Having a look at their own house.
Yeah.
Having a look at their own inattention and failure to prepare and, yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit of a, you know, those who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones.
Yes, it is.
Story. So basically, it's a short chapter and it covers a lot of ground, but it suggests that if you've got a problem, try and find out. Don't judge what that's about. Just acknowledge that there's a problem, and you can probably work out that you can see what a problem is. You don't necessarily have to know why it's a problem. You just kind of go, oh, that's a problem, and you can try working on that.
Yep.
And most of the things that you have an issue with outside, if you just let those go for a little while and just work on your own thing, you'll find that you'll skill up over time and you'll get better at solving your own stuff, and then that'll ripple out to be able to affect change elsewhere. And the idea, of course, if everyone was to be able to do that, the problems that you might see society having would diminish considerably because people are attending to their own...
Well, I mean, I think that's probably twofold as well. You're right. I mean, in a perfect world, that's what everyone would do. But, of course, actually viewed from a completely singular kind of way, you start working on the problems that you perceive that you have, and that actually fixes a lot of the extraneous things.
Yeah.
Because the problems that you are perceiving as being issues actually aren't at all. They're all from in here.
Yeah.
So it's not so much about... Oh, fuck, if only everyone else would fix their stuff. I mean, I will too, but if everyone else would, that would be amazing, and then everything would be fine. But actually, if I just fix this stuff, a lot of other stuff's going to be fine too.
Yeah, you tend to have less of a problem with the other things
that
are problems with society.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. And society is a big, complex thing. Like, you know, the world, you know, there's a lot of people.
It is. And, you know, and I know we spoke about it on the last episode, and I think we've probably referenced it by virtue of the way this guy thinks. instead of, you know, why do I suffer from anxiety? It's like, fuck, why wouldn't I? And isn't it amazing that we, I think when I'm out in the streets, because I drive a lot, I'm actually fucking amazed there isn't more terrible car accidents.
Yeah.
It's actually quite miraculous.
I've said
there's not people running into each other all the fucking time.
Yeah. It's proof that humans are, well, we've developed to the point where we're like, no, we really do want to cooperate and do the right thing. Most people really do.
Yep.
Just going to move back over here.
No, I know what you're doing.
Hey. On your bed. Hey. Over there.
Excuse me.
Yeah. They're very much, people do try to do the right thing. And it's proof that, because we do live in a society where most people don't kill anyone. Like, really, most people don't kill anyone. Most people don't do dodgy things to other people.
Yep.
But we're led to believe,
and most people are mostly nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mostly good, mostly just.
But the collective outrage over certain things. There's a question for you. Why do you think there is this kind of outrage porn that you know, people often use their social media to cast stones through open windows in their glass house. What is it about our current Western society that, you know, that's what we resort to in our behaviour? Not all of us, just some, you know. And not all, but enough enough for it to be obvious. Noticeable,
commentable. Part of it is absolutely that we now have a forum to be able to voice those opinions. And even on a platform like Facebook, where it's not anonymous within the frame of reference of your friends group.
Yeah.
So if you post something racist, your friends can see it and they might pull you up on it. They might agree with you, whatever. But it's still actually mostly anonymous.
Yeah.
And that racist rant might come across someone else's desk on the other side of the world and they might chime in. That's where the keyboard warrior thing comes in. Yeah. People that post blogs and comments on other people's blogs and comments on people's YouTube clips and all of that sort of stuff. It's very easy to... Violence is easy. That goes back as well.
Yeah.
So it's easier to say something nasty than it is to say something nice.
Yeah.
And it's easier to do in an anonymous way where there's no comeback on a social media platform.
Well, I noticed this.
No real consequence.
Yeah, there's something I noticed years and years ago, and it was, definitely about 15 years ago. I was, don't say, definitely. I was working at the Rivoli Cinema and I was having lunch, and I heard two women around about my age, about 25 or so, I guess so. I'm not sure, they could have been a bit older, a bit younger. But they had a real good 15-minute negative conversation about one of their partners, one of their boyfriends. And it was scathing. It was like and loud. And I realized it's like, it's really easy. I mean, look, it's really easy to talk about a problem that you have for a really long time. That's pretty much what our podcast is as well. You know, we often pick our subject and we like try and work it out because you don't have to resolve anything that's going well. Like, it's like, life, you know.
It's easier to write a sad song than it is to write a happy one.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then, because it's like, my boyfriend's really nice to me. Well, my girlfriend's really nice to me. Great. Do you want to talk about it? Well, you know,
because I don't want to hear about
it. She gave me some flowers the other day. I came home and there were flowers on the table. Like, and you look at it, it's like, what do you have to resolve about that? Which is funny because I think it touches it in this chapter, and now I'm kind of getting into the conversation a bit. I mean, we live in the most peaceful time in history for Westerners.
Mm-hmm.
Well, arguably anywhere, almost everywhere in the world. It's the most peaceful time in history.
Yep.
So,
have you read The Better Angels of Our Nature by Steven Pinker?
No.
I was going to reference it in the last chapter.
Okay.
Very much the same thing. Yeah.
And I wonder if there's this kind of manifestation of this proclivity for conflict that we have as animals and as a species.
Sure.
that we've had throughout our entire history of warring tribes, which interestingly, when you get refugees from another culture come into like a Western culture, and there's like this kind of like, oh, hang on, there's like X amount of hundreds of years difference, like, you know, we skewed off from that then, and they've continued to live in this kind of culture, and then when we bring those together, they just don't, often those communities have difficulty working
together. Are you suggesting it that situation gives us an avenue to express what's been endemic in us forever?
Which
the idea that we've actually got refugees come, and as a society we there have a legitimate target to vent our spleen at.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying what happens is you've got two cultures that at some point in time, not that long ago, went in a different direction, split. You know, we went Western Christian, and they stayed in, you know, I don't know, Islamic.
Sure.
You know, Middle East.
Yeah.
Right, and then you kind of reconverge, and then that collective history of we've lived this way, or you know, our ancestors have evolved with this culture, and yours have evolved with this culture, and they come to meet together, and there are certain things about that butt up against each other.
So not that it
feeds the idea of racism or anything like that, but what it does is like, us, we just kind of think different. You know, we behave different, we think different. And what often happens, you hear in the conversation in the public, is that, you should just be able to adapt. It's like, but that's, you should come from somewhere different. Like, it's not that easy. The other aspect of what I was really trying to get at with, it's the most peaceful time ever. Well, we haven't adapted to, as a race, as a species, we haven't adapted to peaceful time. Hmm. We're used to being at war. Like, we've always been at war. Yep. Like, our culture is, you know, particularly Western society, effectively, if you just go back over the last 300-400 years, it's like the UK, like, you know, Britain invading everywhere and then being at war there, and then being... and then having civil wars, and then, like, War of Independence in America, and then you've got, this is just always, this conflict has always been there in our collective history, in the Western collective history. So then we kind of get to now, it's been, even though we, so Australians, there are Australian troops somewhere, but in this part of the world,
we don't experience
war as a daily thing that we have to deal with.
No,
but we need to, because it's in our nature to seek out conflict.
Yep,
of some kind.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and so even this right now between you and I is as a conversation about something that's potentially difficult. You know, you can kind of go, well, you know, we could easily be. Walking the line of, I might say something that pushes a button for you, and you arc up, and, you know, it's like we're kind of looking for opposition and friction all the time.
I think you are.
Is it just because I did that? but I feel like that helps explain why the news is the way it is, why social media presents like it does so often as... polar opposites of, look at this cute fluffy kitten, and then look at this person being an idiot here. Like, why does this happen? Why can't people drive properly? All that kind of stuff, and then kind of the venting of the spleen. And I wonder if, because we need to do that. We need, because conflict with our environment in particular is how we thrive. It's like we're problem solving. Species.
Mm-hmm.
So we're always looking like, I got a problem to solve. And it's hard for our kind of, maybe it's hard for our reptilian brain to understand the difference between a social problem to solve or a, it's cold, I need to get some firewood problem to solve. Like, it's still our nature to try to find something we need to work out.
It's interesting.
To make our space better, the space around us better. Yeah,
we've had people in our lives, you and I, that in inverted commas, love drama.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where does that fit in your scenario?
Well, when you don't...
Is that part of a sliding scale? Of looking for conflict?
Yeah, I don't know.
When every other day you could look at something from this, from our particular person, and it's...
Well, it's a bit... I think it does fall in nice... Well, potentially, one of the answers might be it fall into what this chapter's about, the idea of clean up your life. It's a lot easier to go and find a problem over there and bring it towards you. Like, you know, whether it's like a road rage issue or something like that. It's like... And we were talking about it earlier about... the distinction between, for instance, your friend talking about the problem that they are talking about and then the way that they're actually approaching how they want to express their issue with the problem. Mm. The problem is there. It's for everyone in that particular part of the world is going to be affected by it. But the attitude and the drama that you take to it is your thing.
Mm.
So maybe it's like the people who seek it out, the more drama that they can bring into their lives, the less they have to...
Yeah, sure.
The less they have to process their own clean up your own life
yep.
thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because cleaning up your own life...
And that would so often happen subconsciously.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And this whole thing of like clean up your own room
yeah.
is like that's a concentrated problem. That's a conflict. Like you got a messy room, for example. Like, you know, I don't know if you walk past my bedroom, it's spotless. But if you... No, I thought, I'm going to give that a go. If you look at the rest of my house, I've just moved all that shit out of there and just thrown it everywhere else. Right, but the one space is good.
I didn't look in your room.
Okay. But what you notice is that, you know, when you've got a mess, like you guys can't see this, but this is my music room and it's like stuff's just piled up everywhere. And you go, this is all a... well, that is a conflict that I'm going to have to resolve, right? Or not, or just continue to make worse. I can focus on a conflict somewhere else and maybe bring more mess into this space. Right? so, yeah, the people who love drama are effectively going, well, I'm just going to bring drama in so I don't have to deal with this. Because we're always dealing with some kind of problem. Mm. And I find it, you know, if some of the people that we might know who seem to have drama all the time, you know, that kind of external drama all mm-hmm. the time. And have it, you know, I had this argument with this person. It's like, I don't remember the last time I actually had a real argument with mm. someone, like a face-to-face. I've had face-to-face discussions where you didn't lose your cool and they didn't lose their cool and you had a conflicting opinion. And often what it is you're both navigating the same trajectory, but you're actually on different lanes of the highway. Sure. Like, you know, it's like, and that's semantics that's different. I think, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. But I think it's that thing about that warring nature of...
Okay.
That always being in conflict. And then the social...
I find that quite depressing.
Well...
I don't think you intended it to be.
Well, I think it's like that in the last chapter where, you know, what's he say about being a parent? In the fourth principle is... parents should understand their own capacity to be harsh, vengeful, arrogant, resentful, angry, and deceitful. Now, if you're not a parent, I mean, that's just talking about like what that's like in your relationship with someone mm-hmm. that's in your care that you're supposed to be teaching. But that's how we all are. You know, it applies in every interaction.
Yep.
So I don't know. I guess I find comfort in generally falling back on the idea that, that's right, I'm an animal. We think that humans are super duper special and we have all this extra consciousness and, you know, rah rah. But it's like, well, you know, unless we are, it makes sense to me why, you know, people can kind of go, oh, you know, God of any kind is true and exists and has granted this divinity to us because how else do you explain us being different to other animals? But we're not that different to other animals because you think about the way we behave towards each other left to our own devices. without, because it's like the rules of society actually that we subscribe to, which stop us from doing, but acting like animals.
Sure.
Yeah. And you know, if our parents bring us up well, the society does its job, but then we, you know, we don't, most of us don't.
Most of us. The vast majority of us.
It's stunning. Most of us drive responsibly, properly. And occasionally we don't.
Hmm.
But like most of us stick to, because we don't want to impose our will on other people.
No, we don't.
And it's the idea of like, I don't want you.
12-point bond.
I've only got 8 months to go.
Have you?
Yeah.
Right.
Rocky just got his license back.
Hey.
I think I got a message from it. I got my license back. I'll do any gig I can. I don't think I find it depressing as much as, it's quite fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the difference between you and I.
Yeah, but you don't believe in self-help books. I've got three shelves. I've got three shelves of them behind you.
Fucking look at me.
Look at it, yeah.
We are reading this. We are reading this.
Yeah.
So the reason it's such a short chapter, I think, even though there's a lot wrapped up in it, is it's pretty simple.
Yeah.
Like, it's fucking simple stuff.
Yeah.
Like most of these rules are.
Mm.
Like the Ten Commandments are. It's pretty simple. Not all of them. Some of them don't even make any sense.
And so the interesting thing that I find about when people comment on something that's, a controversy of some type, something, is that they're not taking into account what it must be like to be that person in that scenario.
Yes.
And, so most people aren't very good at a sport, right? So, most people might dabble or might watch, and so they observe, so they think they know a little bit about this, that, or the other.
Yes.
Right? But they can't actually do it.
No.
Certainly not anywhere near to that level. So they've got no idea what it's like to be that good at that. Potentially just an average IQ body, but just happen to be really good at that.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually can't possibly know what it's like to be in their scenario, to be an elite athlete or to be an elite thinker, or to be an elite musician, or an actor. Like, you've got no idea what it's like to live like that. And certainly to get to the point where you're living up there with all of the accolade, pressure, money, implied responsibility as a role model, that kind of stuff, which you haven't created at all.
No.
Like, it just gets thrust upon you as if it's something that is your responsibility and you're doing.
Sure.
Which it's not. So you kind of go, and then people are like, it's a privilege to do that. It's like, you want to do it? Go for it. Like, because what would happen is you'd find that almost everybody thrust into the same situation would probably do a much worse job.
Yep.
Because the rule of averages would suggest most people would do a bad job at being excellent at something.
Yes.
Like,
Yeah, of course.
And I find that the comment about stuff often falls into that. Well, it disregards what it's like to be either ordinary in an extraordinary circumstance or extraordinary in an extraordinary circumstance.
Yeah.
And very rarely do we ever pay attention to anyone who's extraordinary in an ordinary circumstance, because that's not particularly interesting.
Mm.
It's not, that's when so-and-so saves someone, from drowning at a pool, because, they could swim because they were an athlete. I think to sum it up, it makes sense to me why we live in a culture that's always trying to pick a fight. Because we're descendant from apes that pick fights all the time.
Okay.
Even look at our politics. Look at how they spend their time, their question time. They fight. That's what they do. They try and one up each other. Look at what we watch for entertainment all day, every day. Look at the language we use to describe sport. Battle.
Yeah.
We even have the battle of the sexes. We have a battle between people that we have to live with every day. So it's so fundamental in our nature as animals, and also even the language that we use to describe our everyday interactions with other people. It's a race to the finish. We're always looking for a winner.
It takes revolutions to change stuff. I don't mean armed uprising revolutions. I mean like the Me Too movement. It takes for something big enough and noticeable enough to happen to fundamentally change a societal viewpoint that's been so strongly held for however many years.
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I'm not sure about... I think something like the Me Too movement changes the industry. Oh, no, I guess it does. Yeah, I've not really thought about it like that, but I guess it's got that potential to change all sorts of kinds of things beyond just the elite movie industry, music industry, rah-rah. It's got the... has the trickle-down potential.
Yeah, oh, look, I wasn't even talking about that necessarily. I mean that the things that have recently happened in Hollywood have highlighted something that has been there forever, for all intents and purposes.
Yeah.
That there's now a massive, massive shift in perception and behaviour that's come like that, like crazy.
Yeah, it's interesting. We all know that what comes first, the chicken or the egg, is actually the chicken. And I guess there's that aspect of, well, you know, that's an industry that's exploited it's based on exploiting sexuality of men and women forever. And we kind of think it's just about, talent and art and creating and acting and all that kind of stuff. But it makes sense to me that the way we talk about celebrities, particularly actors and, you know, musicians and TV people, as sex symbols, is like, well, it would make sense that in the background it's exactly how the industry runs. It's not a surprise to me that kind of stuff would happen, but it's not a surprise to me because, you know, we're humans and that's how all of our society works.
Oh, Dom.
What?
Nothing.
When I say it's not a surprise, it doesn't mean it's not a surprise, so I expect it, so I think it's acceptable.
I know that.
I'm not saying that.
No, hardly.
But I think this, for me, is an interesting slant that gets pushed when that kind of thing comes out, which is like it tries. Even the Me Too movement, for example, has created a conflict. Like it's an us and them. It's a fight for rights. It's like the language is still so combative, I guess we're not learning, and I just don't feel like we're learning how to approach the resolution of a problem, because we think of it as a resolution of a conflict. I know that seems like it's, you're just picking a point, but I think different things mean different things for a reason. Like different words mean different things for a reason.
Yeah.
And you look at it, it's like, oh, this is a war of this. I was like, just stop with that language, you know.
You're right. I hear what you're saying with the, you need to change the words. But, yeah, I mean, of course, they're intended to convey a revolutionary, seismic kind of shift. Those words carry a lot of weight.
That's true. And I love that you used seismic, because I think we use that word, right, to kind of illustrate how powerful something is,
mm-hmm.
right? but we need to change things incrementally. Like, because if you want a seismic shift, you destroy stuff.
Sure.
Right. And just being destructive is another. It's like, well, yeah, we want to tear down the walls. You know what? How about we take things apart brick by brick so we can rebuild? Because if you just want to tear shit down, it makes it harder to rebuild. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you want to, and often you don't necessarily need to do a demolition to get the change that you need. You should do a restructuring. And then there we are, just using, like, there's demolition, there's tearing things down, there's restructuring, there's doing a renovation on something. And I think that if you want to change things effectively, you need to do it incrementally and sensitively. Because if you want to make a big, huge change, you mess with something too quickly. Which is why, you know, the idea of a revolution, that's why they are often so bathed in blood. Because it gets to the point where it's like, oh, things have been the same, this is a problem.
Yeah.
Yes, it's
Hi.
It's interesting. It's like we have a dog alarm clock of when the podcast should be over.
Yep.
He's lovely.
Yeah, I wish you could see his face. He's just looking at Dad like, for God's sake.
Stop talking.
Sprocket's creating his own revolution over here.
Yeah.
Breath by breath.
Anything else?
I don't think so for today. I think that's pretty good.
Yeah.
We'll reconvene next week.
Let's do that. Should we try and do some condensing of the next couple of chapters and maybe do...
Yep.
See how we go. All right, let's do that.
Stop licking my jeans, you weird bag.
He's a very groomery type dog.
G'day, mate.
I can't believe he climbs up on you. It's hilarious.
Well, I don't stop him.
Yeah, that's right. I think...
He's trying to get his back leg up as well.
Do you know what I think it is? It's, all right, well, I'm the boss here in this house, right? And he's the next boss, right? And whoever you are, he's just letting you know.
Nah.
He's second dog.
That's not what it is.
Oh, it is.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
No. He's accepting me as the leader of his pack. Well, that's why he's trying to get both legs on me right now.
He doesn't when have I said a,
both legs.
He doesn't have a pack.
Hope you get them. Come on, Duffer. I'm giving you a leg hold.
We'll see you next time.
Say goodbye, Sprocket. Sprocket.
Bye, Sprocket.
I know dogs don't understand pointing, but unless they're pointers.
What's over there?
Hey. Yeah. All right.
All right.
See you, guys.
Bye, everyone.